If you know the fish tank, then you also have to know our friends at Planet Protein.
That's right, Big Seth, and Planet Protein is back and better than ever. They're gearing up for the momentous release of their Chocolate Magic Protein Shake, now completely sugar-free and free of sugar alcohols.
But still the same great taste, Juice. And Planet Protein is locally manufactured right here in South Florida. And to top it off, the new Chocolate Magic 2-pound bags feature a wooden scoop and eco-conscious packaging to protect our beautiful oceans.
Hey, no doubt, Seth. In fact, they're so local that my man Anthony, the COO of Planet Protein, is here to tell you why their product is not just good, but good for you.
That's right. Thanks for having me. Had to come down and tell it like it is. We produce Chocolate Magic right here in South Florida with our community in mind on the inside and outside of the bag. Eco-conscious materials, only 8 real ingredients, 4 of which are superfoods, put you in the prime position to conquer your day.
So if you're ready to live a clean and ethical nutritional lifestyle, then visit planetprotein.com now. And remember to use the code FISHTANK to receive 20% off all of your Planet Protein purchases.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @planet_protein.
Bam! Need custom t-shirts made?
What about logo giveaways for trade shows or parties?
Wizard Creations will put your logo on anything and everything, so you got to find them at wizardcreations.com.
Yeah, the lowest prices around, best services available. Wizard puts your logo on everything.
And they really do, Juice. Luke Freeman, who is the wizard at Wizard, is an amazing guy, and if you have something that needs to be branded, Luke is the guy who will get it done. He's done our fish tank shirts that everybody's been asking for. We've worked with him at the Jason Taylor Foundation for years. There's nobody better than Luke Freeman and Wizard Creations.
Yeah, so for all your custom merch needs, call our friends at Wizard Creations at 888-217-4084. That's 888-217-4084. Also check them out at wizardcreations.com.
And when you do that, Luke said use the code FISHTANK. He's going to give you free setup and 10% off your first order. Free setup, 10% off. You're going to save some money and get great branded product. Wizardcreations.com.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank here on the Five Reasons Sports Network. Seth Levitt, DJ Preach, and of course, OJ McDuffie. Juice!
What's up, Big Seth?
Everything's good, man. Everything's good. Yeah, man. We're rolling on season 2.
Yep.
It's football season. I can't complain.
Yeah, man, this is going to be a fun one, man. Because, you know, I've had some interesting guests in here. We've had a lot of Gators.
Yeah, I haven't had one in a minute, though. I got to get a Gator back
in. In the wrong positions. But now we got a guy that's not only, you know, in the right position as wide receiver, also wore the correct number, number 81 at one point. And I'm loving having him in from the U.
From the U, which is tough for me to say at this time of the year right now. But Randall Thrill Hill dives into the tank. What's up, Thrill?
I'm not interested. I'm infamous, I guess. I'm just a little bit different. But glad to be here in South Florida where the humidity is always just right.
That's right.
That's for sure.
Especially for the opposing teams, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to use it to your advantage. And Coach Shula and Jimmy Johnson, they use it to their advantage. But I guess everyone's kind of softer now.
Oh, my God.
You know, we got little domes and half domes and stuff like that, but not us. We were out there in hurricanes, right?
Yeah. I know I played against the U one time where it was like, I don't know, we were coming from up north and played them in high school and in college, and it was 95 degrees. You know, we could have played a night game, Steph. I think we talked about that before, but they said, hell no, you guys are going to play at noon.
With one fan.
That's right.
We'll give you a four fan. Use that.
Yeah, that's right, man. Let's rewind a little bit. Let's go back to where Randall started.
Yeah, well, Thrill, you know, that humidity is nothing new for you. I mean, you're a Miami guy through and through. Right? Is it Killian?
Yeah, Killian Senior High School, and of course from there to University of Miami. But even before Miami Killian Senior High School, I played Little League here in South Florida. And interesting enough, you know, I'm from a very strong family, a very close family, and my dad was my coach. And my dad, I distinctly remember, you know, telling me one day I did something that was good. And we got home, and he looked at me, and he said, "Son, let me explain something to you. You have a lot of talent. You can be very good. And I promise you that if you listen to me and you listen to your mom, say your prayers, stay out of trouble, one day people from miles and miles around will come and watch you play." And that always stuck with me because, you know, a lot of these young kids nowadays, they don't really adhere. They adhere more to the internet and social media as opposed to their family. I used to always, you know, because Juice and OJ and I used to be roommates, and one thing that Juice used to talk about was his mom. Okay, you know, because that was his rock. So my dad was like that for us when I was young. And believe it or not, there was actually six guys at one time that my dad coached Little League that played at the University of Miami on scholarship.
Wow.
Yeah.
He must have been doing pipeline, something right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So what was that team? Let's give a shout out. Does that team even exist any longer?
No, I don't think it, you know, because, you know, times change, people change. And I don't think that particular club, it was a Southgate Optimist Club. And it was down right off of Eureka Drive. In the Colonial Drive area, and you know, myself, Alex Johnson.
This was pretty Flow Rider League.
Right. No, yeah. This one, it wasn't about the money. It was about going out, having fun, staying out of trouble, and keeping the kids off the streets. It wasn't about making money like it is now.
You guys didn't lose very many games, did you?
Actually, we lost a heck of a lot of games.
Did you really?
Yeah. But it was more or less, you know, going out and being disciplined, staying together, you know, talking with each other, one another, and also the families getting together. So my dad is big on family. I mean, like, people know me from all the craziness on the field, but off the field, when it was time to go get grocery, my dad, everybody get in the car, we're going to go get groceries.
Right.
I mean, and I think that's important because, you know, a lot of kids and a lot of the young adults and tomorrow's leaders, they will, you know, think about football. They'll see football and they see, you know, guys like Jason Taylor, OJ McDuffie, and some of these great guys. But you know what? It's about family too, and family first. Make sure you take care of your family as well as your careers.
A little inspiration from Thrill this
absolutely.
Morning. I like it. I like it. Yep. But you mentioned the craziness on the field.
Mm-hmm.
not to
go
past all
that.
That's an important message. But, so I want to go back to Killian for a second, because if you look up on the Wikipedia page, and I didn't know this, Juice, you were a corner in high school. And so I'm trying to figure out, because normally you hear your guy's a wide receiver and he thinks he's going to be a wide receiver, and then he drops his first 10 passes when he gets
to
college,
right.
And they move him to the other side of the ball. You don't usually see the guy go the other direction. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about me being a defensive back. I visited a couple of schools for their summer camps, and one was West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I went to their camp.
You were in Morgantown?
Morgantown, yeah. Ain't nothing to do there, but I was there.
Yeah. Play football, right?
And then I was there, and then I also went to Florida State's football camp. And, you know, of course, Mickey Andrews and Chuck Armada. And because everyone was recruiting me as a defensive back. And if you look up, you know, in the Miami Herald, they had me considered as one of the best athletes in high school athletes as a defensive back. 1 year I had 11 interceptions, broke the school record.
But that's a lot of picks in high school ball.
A lot of damn picks, man. Why would they even throw it his way?
You gotta go get it. But
they throw it 11 times.
It's funny because, you know, going into college, you know, I used to come home and every major school, every D1 school was there waiting on me to get
your
there.
Dad's prophecy.
And I would say, hey, listen, I'm walking past them getting off the bus, and I would say, and they would start talking. I said, no. Mom and Dad are inside. Y'all talk to them. I'm going to my room.
Right. Mm.
Yeah, I ain't got nothing to do with y'all. Y'all got to get through them first. And then if they say yes, then we're good to go.
That's awesome.
But, you know, even the trials and tribulation of picking a school, picking the right school, you know, taking your official visits, and, you know, Juice did this type of stuff too. I originally, believe it or not, decided, and I, if you go look, it's in the periodicals, I verbally committed to Florida State.
Ooh.
Blasphemy.
Now,
ooh. Blasphemy.
Here we go. The coach that was recruiting me was Coach Hubbard Alexander. He lived down the street from me. When this hit the paper, you know, everyone said, okay, Randall Hill's going to Florida State. Jimmy Johnson wasn't really trying to hear that at that particular time. Now, my dad had his own route of how he was going to get me to where I was going to go. And what he did was he put me in the car. He said, son, you made a decision to go to Florida State, and I respect that. And he put me in the car. He says, come on, let's go. We want to go. I want you to tell your grandfather, you know, about your decision. So I go, and you got to understand, my grandfather is a very commanding figure, and so is my grandmother. And I get to my grandparents' house right over in West Perrine. And by the way, I grew up I spent a lot of time there, which was right down the street from Derek Thomas's grandmother.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we kind of grew up in the same area.
And a lot of talent in that area.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
So my grandfather looks at me and says, son, I hear you thinking about going to
Florida State. Grandfather now.
Oh, yeah. Dad's out of it. Dad's out of it, right? So I'm like, I said, yes, sir, granddad, I'm going to go to Florida State. He looks at me, he says, well, son, he says, why do you want to go to Florida State when you got a good university right here and your grandmother and your grandfather can watch you develop as a young man. Son, I think you should go to University of Miami. Yes, sir. I guess I'm going to University of Miami.
That was it, huh?
Flipped you right away.
Literally, that was it. Because that's just, like I said, and people who are listening, it's, yeah, you have fun on the field, but family comes first. And I don't make any major decisions in life without talking mom and dad. Grandma and granddad is not here anymore. So it's kind of like Don Corleone. You go to my dad, you sit down, you take him in the room. And when I got married, everything, you sit down in the living room. That's where everything's decided. Dad, I'm thinking about buying a car. Well, son, what kind of car are you going to buy? Dad, I'm thinking about getting married. Well, son, the young lady that you've been dating for the past 10 years, you ain't going to get any better than that. So, but, you know, so let me back up. Great story. I took an official visit to Florida State previous to my grandfather making my decision for me.
Right.
And I get off the plane, and who's there? Deion Sanders.
Ooh.
Wow.
Bobby Bowden. Governor Bob Graham.
They brought the governor in.
And, no. The bandit. Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds. Wow.
Wow.
I kid you not.
Was he in the Trans Am?
I wish he was. I was like, hey, man, I would have ridden that thing, right? But, you know, so they brought out the big guns.
My God.
But, you know, I got so many stories. Here, let me go forward and then I'm going to come back. So what happens, some years ago, I'm a federal agent, everyone. Yes, I carry guns and I protect this country. I am them. We are they. I'm a figment of your imagination and dismissed as so. I'm a man in black. But I had to go to a judge's house to have an affidavit signed. A federal judge. They're all powerful. Federal judge. And the judge looked at my name, and he says, well, son, I don't know if I should sign that. And I looked at him. I said, sir, did I do something wrong? And, you know, he started laughing and joking. He says, I want you to look at my name and you may figure this out. So I looked at his name and I looked at him and I looked away and I was like, okay, I know you from somewhere. And he says, yes, I was the other individual who was at the airport, who was a circuit judge. He was a state judge at the time trying to recruit.
He was riding shotgun with Burt Reynolds.
He was trying to recruit me to go to Florida State.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I guess you ain't going to sign that, right? He said, no, I'm just kidding. No, everyone knows who you are. You're good. You know,
throw
that
national
job.
Security
yeah.
thing on.
Yeah. But anyway, I get to University of Miami and literally Jimmy Johnson after the, we were getting ready to play the University of Florida, our very first game. And Jimmy Johnson looked and said, do me a favor, go play wide receiver. Literally. That was it.
Wait, so you
Wait
went through
you went, you went through all camp as a
all
DB?
All camp as a DB. All camp as a DB. After the Florida game, which was the first game, do me a favor, Randall. Go play wide receiver.
After the game?
After the game. The next day after
Did
the
you
game.
Play in the game?
Yeah, well, I ran back kickoffs. I actually, okay. My freshman year, I was like a couple right behind Barry Sanders. I broke the single season kickoff return record.
But who's
yeah.
counting, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Wait, so he's like, we need to rock in this
yards
guy's
in return. Yeah. And then getting out, yeah.
Bro,
yeah.
I mean, Juice, you know, you make your mark, and I try to tell these young guys, okay, yeah, you want to be wide receiver, you want to be defensive back, you want to be quarterback, you want to be a linebacker. No, learn it on special teams first. You know, learn it on special teams first. So, you know, I didn't get any returns. I don't think that game, maybe one. But literally the next day in practice after our 12-minute run, Randall, do me a favor, go play wide receiver. You're wide receiver now.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Well, I mean, about it. Alonzo Highsmith, he wasn't a running back. He was a defensive lineman from Columbus.
It's just all bananas.
No, he wasn't. He was not.
Was it? That's that speed thing, right? With Jimmy. I mean, it's
well, it's the speed thing, and it's the. I think Jimmy. You know, Jimmy was a little bit better when it came to understanding personalities.
Right.
Understanding speed, but also personalities. Alonzo Highsmith and his personality. Yeah, he can play defensive line. I wouldn't say defensive end. Columbus. I mean, one great player. Do me a favor, go play running back. Go play fullback.
Right.
Okay.
And that was it. You don't say that's anything.
Yeah. Jimmy Johnson, come on, give me a break.
You know, a lot of times, a lot of times they recruit you or something, though, and then they get you in.
Yeah, and they know.
So they have it in mind.
Once we get you in, I can do whatever now. Yeah. You know, they had a lot more control back then than they do now. And now these kids can go on the portal and transfer out. But back then,
you
were
do
stuck.
That.
You had to ask them for permission to transfer.
And most times they said no.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So you,
but you had, you know, Florida State, who sends Deion out. I wonder if their vision was defensive back the whole time,
right?
And they went to Deion and then T-Buck and the whole and Jimmy's like, nah, you know, we're just going to move your
Mickey Andrews, Chuck Armada. I was going to be a defensive back there, without a doubt. I was going to be a defensive back. Jimmy Johnson had other ideas, which is fine. It worked out for the best.
For you and him.
I remember the first day of camp, you know, one of the things you do, you know, incoming freshman, you run the 40. And you had a lot of guys who had just left the University of Miami who were holding out, such as Alonzo Highsmith, such as I got so many stories to tell you. Let me back up. I mean, we need to do like two podcasts.
Yeah, we can.
Josh Darrow and the Five Rings guys are going to be sitting here like, how the hell did we not get this?
All right, let's back up. I remember even in high school, you know, because you signed your letter of intent during or right before track season. And I remember, you know, I was running track, had fun.
Never knew he was running track.
Yeah, that's I was waiting for that.
Of course. Yeah. So what happens is, I remember we were in regionals, and who's coming down the stands? I see Jerome Brown. Okay, Jerome Brown. I see Tolbert Bain. Okay. I see Brett Perriman. I see Irvin. I see all these guys. I'm like, they come up to me and they said, hey, you're going to win this. You're going to win this 220, right? Because we ran 220 yards.
220,
right?
Yeah.
You're going to win this 220.
220
right?
Yards, yeah. Instead of meters. Yeah. 200 meters now, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, 200, footnote, 220 yards is longer than 200 meters.
Right.
So anyway, they come down the stands and they're like, you're going to win this 220, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to win it. No. You don't understand. How many yards are you going to win it by? I'm like, what are you talking about? How many yards I'm going to win it by? I'm going to win the race. He said, no. You, this Jerome Brown, these guys. No, you signed to come to the University of Miami. We just don't win. You have to win by.
You got to embarrass somebody, huh?
You got to embarrass someone. So I said, okay, I'll win by five yards. I said, no, you need to give us 10 yards.
That's nuts.
Now that, but that's Jerome Brown. I'm talking about Jerome Brown.
Sure.
So needless to say, I found out later that those cats were betting on the race.
Of course they had money on the damn thing, yeah.
They were betting on the race. And the guys over the stands, they were not taking any bets unless they were giving yards, kind of like a point spread. I'm like, come on, bro. So,
of course they were.
So the first day of training camp.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead, bro.
Tell me the results.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on, bro. Come on.
Did you get by 10?
I gave him 10, 15.
There you go. All right,
come on. When Jerome Brown.
Yeah, right.
Come on, bro. Jerome Brown. These guys, bro, come down and say, hey, how many yards you going to win by? Are you kidding me? You're going to give them that and then some, right? Or you're going to find somewhere to run after the race.
Right. You better keep running, right?
And it ain't up no tunnel either. It's going home and getting in the car somewhere, right? But when I get to the University of Miami, who's standing again? Because Jerome Brown and also Alonzo Highsmith, they were holding out. And Alonzo comes up to me, and I had some old school, high top, worn out Nike cleats, and they weren't even like tempos or anything like that. And I just, you know how it is, Juice. Once you start falling in love with a certain pair of shoes, you kind of just want to wear, these are my shoes.
Right.
So what happens is Jerome and Alonzo come up to me and they say, you going to run in those? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to run in these right here. So I said, yeah. And they say, well, you're the guy we've been bragging about. You have to run a 4.3 or under. Or, you know, we're going to have problems. Because we've already told Johnson.
No, we don't want to have problems.
That you're going to be the fastest guy here. And you're going to run in those? And I'm like, I'm going to run in these right here. So I ran my 40. The time is classified. I would tell you guys, but it's, you know. It was a 4.3 something. It was low 4.3. I was like 4.33 or something like that. And as they were walking away, they yelled to Jimmy Johnson. They say, give us the time. And then John said, yep, you're right. He's the fastest one out here. But, you know, that's what the University of Miami was. You didn't want to embarrass the guys who had bragged about you. You didn't want to embarrass the guys who paved the path for you. Right. And that's how you have to look at it, even with your family. You know, people have prayed for better things to come, for generations to come. So, you know what? Show up and do the right thing. Yeah, you represent your school. I kind of tease Juice and Drayton about this sometimes, but and everyone thinks about things differently. But you represent your school, but you also represent your family too, mm-hmm. Whether it be the name on the back of your jersey or with the name on your, not only on the back of your jersey. So you don't want to embarrass them.
Yeah. You know, and that's your extended family.
Yep.
So let's talk about a little bit about, you know, you talk about the guys, Michael Irvin and those guys and Brett,
mm-hmm.
And when they show up to games,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a different atmosphere for you guys on that sideline. When you got those guys that play before you on that sideline, I mean, how do you guys get so, I mean, I see you guys so juiced, so pumped. And that swagger comes out. First of all, where'd all that swag come from? And then how to get down to how to trickle through the whole team like that?
Okay, well, right now it's called swagger. Back then we called it blunt force trauma.
Right, right,
right. Force trauma.
You drop this ball, it's gonna be some problems. There's gonna be some consequences and repercussions. I mean, because you got to understand the whole swag thing is, and I think a lot of schools have it, but it came from practice. I mean, I think. Coach Johnson and even starting off with Coach Schnellenberger having practice after a game, literally full pads, because they didn't show up the way they should have showed up. Full pads, we're going to practice right now. But it was just so intense. My roommate, Robert Bailey.
It's starting to make sense.
Yeah, who we grew up together, you know, and he was on one of my dad's Little League teams. We would fight in practice, literally. I mean, go blow for blow, and we were roommates. And, and you know, I've been thrown off the field many a time. Fighting with him, fighting with my other roommate. You know, they played defensive back, and you know.
All right, yeah, you were a DB before, and you switched on him. That's
what
the problem.
Well, yeah, you know, you're probably right. That's probably what the problem
is.
Well,
it was. It switched out, man.
And I remember Coach Erickson, you know, throwing us off the field, and I look at Robert, look at Roland Smith. Hey, you know what? Let's go get something to eat. We'll fight tomorrow. You leave it on the field.
Yeah.
But it's very intense on the field, especially when you're talking about that level, especially when you're talking about playing against teams such as a Penn State or a Notre Dame or a Florida State.
What about a Texas?
Now, funny. You guys took a whole different – Texas wasn't ready for you guys went up there. Let's talk, please.
1991. Oh,
please talk about that game.
The state of Texas wasn't ready.
That's what I'm saying. Hey, these brothers rolled in there.
Well, everyone was mad. And I remember the night – okay, leading up – I mean, and Juice, you know this. A bowl week is a series of, your practices and having fun, but it's also series of different events that you have with the with the opposing team. And we were told to be on our best behavior.
Wait.
So we were. So some events we went to, they were talking. I mean, University of Texas was talking all mad crap everywhere.
You can say shit.
Okay, mad shit everywhere. Okay, and what happens is, leading up to the game, it just boiled over. I mean, literally, it just boiled over because we come out for warmups and they're still talking shit, and we go back in the locker room. Some of the seniors who get ready to leave who don't really care at this particular point. We know we're gonna get drafted. We know we've graduated, so we know what was going on. And we looked at each other and said, okay. We invented this. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, this just, they're trying to, it's like you trying to beat a man, but you haven't beat the man. And by the way, the chances of them beating us was simply astronomical, baby. But, so we come out and I remember, Robert Bailey, just like on the documentary, he comes in, he looks at me, he says, hey, Randall, I'm telling you right now. And Lamar was standing right next to me. He says, whoever catches this ball, I'm knocking their ass out. And I looked at him and I said, man, you crazy. And Lamar started laughing. Lamar said, you gonna knock him out? Hey, man, do your thing, baby. And that just led up into the whole frenzy of all the penalties over, 100-some yards penalties. But if you look at that video, if you look at that game, the quarterback did not throw me the ball all game.
The quarterback.
Now, you got to understand this.
We're not mentioning who the quarterback is.
Well, that was Craig Erickson.
Craig, wasn't it? Yeah. By the way, Bailey did knock the guy out on
yeah,
the opening kickoff.
Of course. He said
he called the knockout.
So let it be done. But Craig, and Juice knows how it is. When you're in the huddle, sometimes you have little mini. Oh, not with Dan, but you may have mini riots in the huddle. And we used to have a bunch of riots in the huddle.
I can only imagine.
Oh my goodness, bro! Especially when Jimmy Johnson left and Dennis Erickson came in, because like 60 or 70% of the plays that he called, we changed. And I remember the very first game we played. And yes, I will be coming back to Texas. I just got a lot of stories. We played against Wisconsin and we crushed Wisconsin like 50-something to 6 or something like that. The next day in practice, Coach Erickson is like, "Hey, we had a great game and great yardage, and we didn't have a lot of penalties." But
what was that shit you were running?
He literally said, he says, hey, but you guys changed a lot of my plays. And we said, okay. And then he says, well, hey, and you guys have these hand signals. Can you at least teach me the hand signals?
No, we can't. Teach me the hand signals?
No, we can't. No. Hey, listen, it is.
Can you teach me the hand signals?
No, we're not teaching. I mean, we were out there like catcher and pitcher.
Yeah.
We shake receiver. We standing out there, and sometimes Craig would give it, and we shake it off. Okay, there we go.
Like sandlot.
We used to have fun, man. Because
had to ask him for the hand signals.
It's funny because the game of football and you know, getting back to the youth who are listening to this broadcast, it's a lot of fun. But you have to become a student of the game. If you're not a student of the game, you will not be successful. You have to know the X's and the O's. You need to study the playbook even when you're not in the meeting rooms. You need to understand that playbook And I'm not saying go over your coaches, but know it just as well or even better than the coaches, because you are on the field. And that's one of the things that I don't like about college football now. And I'm sure Juice will sustain on this one, because it kills me when they're standing there at the line of scrimmage, and to get a change of play, they have to look at the sideline.
Everybody, get
the hell out of here. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Dan Marino looking at the sideline trying to get a play?
Yeah, they see a picture of Beyonce. Yeah. Oh, okay. Beyonce? Okay.
Yeah, come on, bro. I mean, are you kidding me? That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen before. I don't like it. And I guess it's what's in trend right now.
Yeah. Well, they don't prep kids for the next level, which they don't care about in the college game.
Right.
You know, some colleges
You're
do,
right.
but they don't prep them for the next level doing stuff like that. You know, just like the whole shotgun thing. But I'm with you, man. It's funny to see these kids out here, you know.
You know,
they're probably
like
trying to avoid having the mutiny,
right.
and not knowing the calls that their own players are making. That's what they're avoiding.
You just brought up a good point, though, Juice. I thought you said I did. I was doing an interview with Lamar Thomas, and one of the questions we asked him was, "What is the teaching now of wide receivers?" And he says, "Well, it seems like nowadays they're and by the way, we'll come back to the Cotton Bowl.
Appreciate that.
It seems like nowadays they're teaching receivers how not to get open and just throw a back shoulder throw. No, Juice beat people at the line of scrimmage. Urban Fryer beat people at the line of scrimmage, got open, got that separation, so the quarterback can lay the ball in there. Now it's okay. Well, if you don't get open, we just throw a back shoulder throw. Get
you
the hell out! I mean, am I right, bro?
Yeah, you're right. It's
especially
bailout.
Now with all
Big
the rules,
yeah.
the defenders can't even touch.
They don't teach out, you know. Randall was really good at when you get off to stack that guy. These guys don't care about stacking anymore. You know, that means getting on top of that DB and then giving the quarterback an alley or a lane to throw. Now they just let you get covered and try to throw back shoulder all the time. You don't have to work.
That's not a route.
Yeah, you don't
That's
have to work.
That's not a route. When young kids ask me about how to run a route, I mean, you look at the Cotton Bowl. You look at 3rd and 43 Notre Dame. You look at what Juice, a foot technician. I mean, you get open first, and then you get the separation so the quarterback can get the ball in there.
Right.
Not, okay, well, I'm side by side with a defender, and I'm going to just throw a back shoulder throw.
Yep.
Get the hell out of
yep.
here.
That's changed a lot.
But even when you look at the whole Cotton Bowl and the whole tunnel thing, and know there was no penalty thrown.
So, yeah,
it was
that.
Totally legal back then. We changed all those rules. That's what university.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's right.
We were the school that and the team that when you think you have all of the answers, we rewrote the questions. That's what we did. So
Craig Erickson threw you open.
He threw me open. That's a good one, right?
Yeah, he just slid that in there.
I just watched the video. He had a guy by about 15 yards.
Yeah.
Did Jerome have money on that one too?
But no, the whole tunnel thing was not pre-planned. You know, I'm very spontaneous. I'm very animated. And yeah, I went through the tunnel and I turned around and gave him a
You're way up the tunnel.
He just kept running.
That's another 50
I
yards
he was
at
leaving
least.
The stadium.
That was like 50 yards past the end zone.
So it's funny because I've had some federal judges, some assistant U.S. attorneys look at me and say, I need to speak with you. And I'm like, okay. And they look at all they say is, you're the guy. I'm the guy what? You're the tunnel guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm the tunnel guy. I had one judge who told me that I was a tunnel guy.
Tunnel guy.
And he says, I need to see you in chambers. So I go into his chambers. The case was over. And I walk into his chambers, and there's Notre Dame paraphernalia all over the place.
It's a bad start.
And I'm looking around, and he says, yeah, I guess you see all my Notre Dame stuff. I'm like, yeah. You know, they understood that these judges and these assistant U.S. attorneys understood that, yeah, I had fun on the field, but, you know, in bringing it back to, you know, the starting point, you know, because even, you know, Jason Taylor and you, Seth, you know, you guys mentor to some of these young adults. Have fun on the field, but you know what? Be able to write when you go to court. Be able to enunciate your words when you're in front of the stands and when you're in front of a crowd of people. Be able to say yes sir, no sir to people and give them their just respect. And that's what I've learned, and that's what I've taken from the field and taken it to either whether it be the courtroom, whether it be interviewing a suspect, whether it be dealing with diplomats, whether it be traveling the world. And I think it's important for important lesson for young kids to learn.
That's great to hear, man.
I couldn't agree more.
Because if you just watch those YouTube videos, you wouldn't expect that to come
no,
out,
yeah,
out
right.
of the tunnel guy.
You're right.
You know, and it's funny. People always say that to me. People say, I didn't think that you were like this. I'm like, well, you thought that I was that wild, crazy guy on the field.
were.
And I was, but off the field. OJ, I tell you, I've never even had anything alcohol before in my life.
That's right.
It's just the way I tell, you know, young adults, you don't have to live your life like that, but it's just how I live my life and how my wife lives her life. And she pushes me just like I push her. And I try to surround myself with people who are upwardly mobile, who have the drum major instinct, the want, will, and or desire to be the best, to be a leader. When you watch a drum, when you watch a band, the drum major leads. And that's as per Dr. King, the drum major instinct, always wanted to be the best.
That's what's up, man. And, you know, keeping it on that note, you're a federal agent and how, which is six shooters in the tunnel. I mean, you think about that. Nowadays, on a serious note, you couldn't do anything like that.
Because of the
environment.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I'm talking to people and signing autographs and doing stuff, when people are not mistaking me for O.J. McDuffie.
I was going to go there. I was going to wait to go there.
Hey, Juice. No, I ain't Juice.
Yes, we get that. Oh, we get that all the time, man.
So, no, but people always ask me, hey, can you do the six shooters? And I always tell them, no, I can't, because it's different time, different era, and you don't want to come across, somebody may take it wrong.
Correct.
And you just don't want to do that. And, you know, I'm not saying that we are a little bit more sensitive right now, but you just don't want to be taken in.
Well, in some ways we are, and understandably so. That being said, don't take any offense to our promo video if you saw it before you listen to this podcast. So
it's all in fun.
We do appreciate you letting your hair down for us.
The views expressed here are simply those. No, I'm just kidding.
Of the tunnel guy.
This is Ricky J. Mark. In a world where sports radio continues to shift around the whims of corporate interests, we understand that the constant, unexpected changes can be exhausting from time to time. So that's why we think you should sit back, relax, and take five. Reasons, that is. So go ahead, grab your smartphone, and subscribe to the 5 Reasons Sports Network, available on virtually every podcast platform. We're South Florida's fastest-growing on-demand sports media network. So you decide when you want to tune in. You decide when you want to listen. Because we know your life can be hectic, go ahead, fall in love with our lineup, including 5 on the Floor, 3 Yards Per Carry, The Fish Tank, Light-Skinned Opinions, and Cinco Razones. Whenever you want. All you need is an internet connection. So go ahead, tune in. Try us out. We're by Miami, for Miami, and spreading rapidly throughout South Florida.
On 3 Yards Per Carry, Chris Kaufman had enough.
They churned 26% of the roster days before the game. I mean, it's absolutely, I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything like that before. And trust me, you haven't seen anything like that. You listener, you have not seen anything like that either. And anybody who says, oh, this is the Patriot way, this is what they do. No, that's bullshit. That is not true. That is not something that the NFL does. It is not something you've ever seen before. It's not something you've seen in New England.
No.
It's not something you've seen anywhere else. So don't let Brian Flores pull the wool over your eyes and say, you know, oh, turnover in the NFL happens. Turnover, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, bullshit. That's bullshit, folks. Okay. That is a lie. Okay.
Yes.
No, they churned over 26% of the roster days before the season began. And that had a drastic effect on the outcome of this game.
Download, subscribe, and listen to us on your favorite podcast provider.
So I got a question for him, Drew.
Yes, sir.
So we talked about the Cotton Bowl. Mm-hmm. You talked about being a senior, and this is a Miami Dolphins podcast.
Yes, sir.
We do cover these great days. And so there was that, you know, you went into the draft. You were represented by a guy who also might be known for semantics, right? Were you a Drew guy?
I was a Drew guy.
You were one of his first guys.
I was his first round draft pick.
Yeah. I remember seeing that on ESPN. Yeah,
put him on the map.
Yeah. Wow. You know, it's interesting because, you know, Drew, I think Drew is a good agent. But looking at my personality now, I'm a little bit more reserved, especially when it comes off the field.
He was representing that guy running out of the tunnel, right?
Not,
wasn't that what he
was
bringing?
Not me. He wasn't representing – I mean, Juice knows. I mean, you guys know. Usually when I'm out in public, I'm coat and tie. I'm suspenders.
Yep.
It's just – I'm just different. I mean, and because I always can see my dad standing behind me. I can always see my grandfather standing behind me. So Drew wasn't necessarily representing that guy. He was representing the tunnel guy. And I don't think Drew really knew who that guy was.
Interesting.
It's just because I keep to myself. I don't, you know, I don't do the club scene. I didn't really do the club scene back then, but, you know, maybe every once in a while. I remember I used to have a ping pong table in my living room, and guys used to come over late at night and play ping pong.
Right.
You know, back in the day when I was with the Dolphins. But that was my style. I'm the guy who you're going to call when you're drunk and you need a ride home.
The original Uber.
That's me. Like, pick up the phone, call me. But, you know, Drew has had a successful career.
That's an unbelievable career.
All right. Well, let's talk about draft day then. Mm-hmm. Team 91, mm-hmm. 23rd overall pick. Where were you expecting to go? And then what were you doing? And how did you feel when you got the call from the Dolphins?
I was invited to New York. And I said, no, I was not going to be one of those guys.
Right.
Who's sitting there sweating and not being drafted and then have to wait for the next day. So.
And our draft was on Sunday. There was a Sunday draft then as well.
Sunday draft. So I went to the stadium. And they had like a big draft party at the stadium. And I was in the stadium. And I was actually hoping to get drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. You know, going back with my old coach Johnson.
I mean, he had the six shooters.
Yeah, so right. Going back, exactly.
I couldn't wait to have you in Texas.
But that didn't occur. So when I got the call from Shula, you know, he said, hey, you know, think about drafting you with the 23rd pick of the first round. You know, what do you think about that? And I said, oh, are you kidding me? Absolutely. At that particular time, my mom had already left the room when she went outside because she couldn't take it anymore. By the way, I've talked a lot about my dad. My mom is a little bit different. They've been together for 58 years.
Wow.
They're total opposites. My dad is cool, calm, and collected, and my mom will cuss your ass out. Period. So she left the room because she couldn't take all the stress. So they called my name, but I'm in the stadium, so you know the fans went crazy. They hurried me out into a marked Miami-Dade police vehicle, and we went over to St. Thomas.
Yeah, 91. What is this?
St. Thomas.
He's there for the couple. Yeah, I think it was crazy. Beautiful place.
Yeah, St. Thomas. Yeah, where the rooms were right there. You didn't have the hotel rooms were right there.
Right.
So, but no, it was a great experience. And I tell a lot of the young adults who want to be like O.J. McDuffie, who want to be like the Michael Irvins, to take it to the next level. The NFL and being drafted. What? Hold on. Let me back up. Out of 1.5 million. And I just gave the speech to some administrators in Texas. Out of 1.5 million seniors, approximately 300,000 to 400,000 will make it a D1. Out of that 300,000 to 400,000 that make it a D1, I'm gonna say 300, 350 will get invited to the NFL scouting combine. Out of that 200, 250 get drafted and or get a shot. Out of that number, only 150 will get their pension. I'm giving you facts. It is like hitting the lottery. So
3-3 to get your pension still, right? Is it still?
No, it's three years, three games. It's three years, three games, or something like that.
Right.
But the average person who you see on TV playing football only plays two and a half years. So most of those guys you see will not get a pension. So What I'm trying to say is, sports and specifically the NFL is an opportunity if you can make it there. To give you a jump start on life to continue your life.
After life. After football life.
Yeah. I mean, OJ is not living underneath a bridge, homeless.
Not yet.
Please, whatever, bro. You squared away.
Yeah.
You squared away.
Right.
But, you know, be able to speak, be able to talk, network, talk to people. Don't be an asshole. Sign the autographs because you never know who it may be that may come back and help you one day. And that's the way I look at the NFL. You know, it's given me the opportunity to do some things. It's given me an opportunity to, you know, I work in our Texas office now, and one of the judges there, you're the guy. I'm like,
yeah.
But when you take the stand and because you have spoken on TV and because you have done these interviews, you can get on the stand and you can speak, you can enunciate your words, and defense attorneys will tone it down because they know that you're prepared.
Right.
You can handle this. And you take everything from the field and you take it in and put it into your everyday life.
That's what's up. So draft day, how about that draft day for the Canes? They had 11 guys drafted that day.
Yeah, it was about that.
11. Day. I counted them.
How many in the first round?
Two.
Yeah, two.
Him and Russell.
Russell was the first pick.
The Cowboys.
Yeah, and again, Coach Johnson, bringing it from the University of Miami, he set the trend because what Coach Johnson was doing was he was basically, he never had a guy to hold out. Think about it. Because the deal was already done. It's like, okay, OJ, I'm going to draft you in the first round, the first pick.
Talking about Coach Shula or Coach Johnson?
Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Johnson, when he was with Dallas.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. He would say, okay, OJ, I'm going to draft you in the first round. You're going to be our guy, but you have to agree to these terms. It was already done. And I think the previous to the whole slotting system now, the NFL outlawed that because they wanted the spirit of the negotiation. But if you notice, Coach Johnson never had a holdout in draft because the deals were already done before he even picked them.
Right.
You're going to take this?
Pick you.
Or we're not going to pick you. That's what he did to Alvin Harper, all those guys.
But you were drafted by Coach Shula.
I was drafted by Shula.
Did he make that same agreement?
No. Absolutely not. I sat out for a minute. I missed a week. A lot of people say that I missed a lot more than that, but no, I only missed a week.
Some people say you missed 4 weeks.
No, I only missed a week. Hold on, let me take that back. I missed one preseason game. That year, and you guys can look it
up.
So
you missed more than a week.
No. Here's the thing. They went to Japan and played. I think I may have missed 2 weeks. They went to Japan and played.
The number's growing here.
No. Seriously. And I didn't go to Japan, but I played in four preseason games. Right. So I didn't, people blew it out of proportion and the media did, but no, I didn't.
How about Coach Shula? How did he handle it?
He wasn't too happy.
It's
just not his style. But when I was, here's the story behind the story. A lot of people don't know. When I was drafted, they already had Tony Martin, they had Duper, and they had Clayton. And you guys can check, you can ask Duper about this. That year, supposedly Clayton was going to have some type of operation on his neck. After our first regular season game, Clayton had over 200 yards receiving, or close to it, in Buffalo. So it's like, okay, we don't need Randall Hill. We still got Mark Clayton. But Clayton is a route runner.
So you think that they drafted you thinking that Clayton was done?
Yes, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know, but call Clayton. He'll tell you.
Yeah.
He'll tell you. Call Duper. He'll tell you. So that's when I got traded, and it's like, oh, well, the holdout. No, it wasn't that. It was Clayton had, I want to say it was his neck or something like that. And I remember standing there in Buffalo, and we were warming up, and there was this big fat dude that was yelling at Clayton, and then Clayton turned around and was just warming up and said, "Eat a carrot, fat boy."
That's Clayton.
That's Clayton, right?
That is Clayton.
And Clayton just went off. I'm going to say 1991. Clayton went off. He had close to 200 yards. I know. Yeah, he just went off. And
he made the Pro Bowl that year.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. So they weren't expecting Clayton to play. But see, no one tells the story behind the story. But if you call Clayton up, he'll tell you that. If you call Duper up, he'll tell you that. If you call Tony Martin up, he'll tell you that. The guys who were there, they'll tell you that. So at that particular point, they didn't need Randall Hill, which is fine. I was a luxury. So they sent me to Arizona, where most guys' careers just die.
At that point, yeah,
especially
they were.
Then.
Yeah.
Oh, are you kidding
especially
me? Yeah. I went through like 9 quarterbacks there in 4 years.
Wow.
If more, the funniest quarterback was Jim McMahon. He was funny.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, he was a character.
He's still
he was
funny,
a character.
Dude.
But it was some interesting things that happened out there.
I'm sorry, real quick. You guys had a bunch of receivers. You had Mike Williams, James Pruitt, Scott Miller, Tony Martin.
Nobody talks about that. Everyone's like, oh no, he held
Duke,
out. And
Clayton,
they didn't need me.
Freddie Banks.
Me. Exactly. They didn't. All those guys could get the job done. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, we don't really need Randall because we got all these other guys, which is fine. And like I said, Clayton went to the Pro Bowl that year. So I go out to Arizona and I deal with, I'm not even gonna call his name, but he's probably, and I don't say this, and Juice, you've been around me. I've never said this before, but he's probably one of the most racist individuals that I've ever come across.
Wow.
No name, huh?
I'm gonna let you guys
see if we can figure it out.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you guys figure it out. This guy was in Atlanta one time, and I told people, and this is when Mike Vick first got there. And what this guy did was he brought Chris Chandler down to Atlanta to play quarterback. And I said, you know what? I told people, I said, hey, Michael Vick will not see the field. And they said, well, Michael Vick is their guy. I said, he won't see the field until this particular guy leaves. And I said, I guarantee you they're going to put Chris Chandler there and they're going to make sure Chris Chandler is the guy. Chris Chandler started and stayed there until that individual coach left. That same coach went to Tennessee. And I said, why am I forgetting this guy's name? Quarterback, black quarterback. Come on.
McNair.
Steve McNair.
I said, McNair will not see the field until this guy leaves. He did not see the field until this guy left. In the preseason, they put it out there and they let it be known. When I was in Arizona, that whoever has the best stats going in, because it was me, Ricky Prohl, and Ernie Jones. Okay, who's going to be the starters? Okay. So I kid you not, I outshined everybody. I remember even having a touchdown in Denver, and I went and sat on a John Deere tractor
in the back of the end zone.
Yeah. There he's back. Yeah, right? So my stats are up to par. Everything's good to go. And the position that I was playing in was I was competing with someone who was not my complexion. And I remember this coach saying, no, I can't start you. I'm like, okay, not a problem. What am I going to say?
Right.
What am I going to do? So, you know, things happen and, you know, I could care less now because, you know, I'm happy. I'm working. I'm in 6 years. I'll have my second 401k completed. my second nice. Pension completed.
Yeah, buddy.
I'll have my Social Security and then my wife's an MD. Y'all can go to hell. I'm good.
That's right. Damn,
that's wild because you don't hear about that. Early 90s.
You know, it's not as public. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
that's what I'm saying.
The locker room.
Not that it didn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It happens. And you know, only thing I say is, you know, you just got to keep going. You, as my dad always says, you know, hey, what are you gonna do? Stop living? Hey, you got to keep going, son. You got to keep going. And you know, he's my rock when it comes to stuff like that. Now, when it's time for me to go off on somebody, okay, that's my mom. Hey, mom, what I need to say? Well, you need to cuss their ass out, baby, and you need to, because your mom and you let them know if they.
And they've been married 58 years, huh?
Oh, my mom. Yeah. Oh, I had on one of the radio shows that I was doing one time, and the first thing it was on Mother's Day. I said, mom, and as soon as she got on, I said, mom, do me a favor. You're on the air. A lot of people can hear you. You can't cuss. You understand? Don't cuss.
We need to get your mom on the podcast, man. No, that sounds like my kind of interview.
She has some stories because her sister, who just passed this year, if you guys are into old school R&B, they did a story about my mom's sister. My mom's sister was married to one of the great singers back in the day, Frankie Lyman. And they made a movie about it.
Yep.
Why Do Fools Fall in Love? Starring...
Lawrence Tate, right?
Lawrence Tate was in it. Also... Halle Berry, Lila Rashawn, and there was one other actress in there, well-known actress.
Good stuff.
Yeah, and
so which one played your aunt?
I want to say, was it Halle? I think Halle Berry played.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, there. She was married. It's funny. She was married. Cool or not cool? She was married. Okay. When I was at the University of Miami, I remember when this whole story went down. There was a TV show called Why Do Fools. No, not one of them. It was called A Call to Glory on ABC. And my aunt was watching it, and they were playing one of Frankie Lyman's songs. Mm. And what happens is she goes to sue because they didn't get permission from her, and she goes to court, and there's two other women there suing at the same time.
Crazy.
This guy was married to three women at the same time.
Oh, that's right.
Crazy. I guess not
Frankie.
Cool.
Yeah, Frankie Lyman.
But if you're going to be played by somebody.
I know, right? Yeah, no, it was an interesting time back then, and I know the family. We used to talk about it, and then I remember also when we...
what's your aunt's name?
Emira Lyman. She just passed away this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Looks like Layla Rashad played her.
Layla Rashad? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, and then even the whole Jerry Maguire, that's actually me and Drew.
That's funny you say that.
So,
Show Me the Money.
Yeah. And by the way, I didn't get paid for that. Drew left me hanging on that one. But that's all right, Drew.
I actually saw Drew in Arizona when they were shooting that. He was rolling around with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes, thank you.
And they were like, every party they were at, every situation they were at, they were getting ready for the show.
Really. Yeah.
You know, they pretty much shot it all in Arizona as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was the team he was on, the Arizona team.
It was the Arizona Cardinals.
Yep.
I was with the Arizona Cardinals. It was a brash, you know, cocky guy on the field. That was me, and then it was the agent, Tom Crute. That was Drew.
Yeah,
I kid you not. That's
the
me.
Young it's, agent, the young agent. Drew, that's
yeah. Drew called me and said he was going out there to do it, but nobody showed me the money.
Right,
where
right.
my money at? But right. I left it alone. Just not my.
Johnny was thrilled. The money.
Johnny got a cameo in that movie as
See?
Well.
See, yeah. I had a small cameo in Miami Vice. But
there you go.
That's something different. Though.
There's you your moment. You and Bobby Barker. Was Bobby attending bar in that,
I know,
that
right?
episode?
But yeah. So you know, we had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun playing.
That's good stuff right there.
So but, then when you got to the Dolphins, mm-hmm. Your rookie year, you wore what number?
81.
There we go.
81. 81.
Yeah.
That's right. And see,
by the time you got back, somebody else was wearing that number.
Juice got the number. Hey, listen, let me tell you something. I respect guys. You know, I didn't know OJ at that time, but I knew he wore the number. But what I did was, because like when you're watching film, just like, okay, when I was in college, I used to, he didn't play wide receiver. But this guy had some of the best footwork that I've ever seen, Aaron Metcalf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this dude can go this way and then 90 degrees without tearing out his knees and just and without missing a beat. So what you do is you watch guys' footwork as a wide receiver. So when you watch an OJ, you're watching his footwork. Juice is not a blazing guy, but he's going to get his separation by his footwork. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by getting open. And Juice will get open at the line of scrimmage. So, and when you're watching cut-ups of other teams, okay, man, this dude is pretty good, bro. This, where are you going to school, Penn State? God damn.
No,
good player, good footwork, good hands. So, I mean, I ain't going to fight with number 81. Hey, give me another number. I don't care.
That's what. Hey, it was up for, you could have bought it off.
Nah, listen to this guy, bro.
And he's got a price.
I didn't get an offer. I didn't even get an offer.
He had that veteran money at that point.
Nah, bro, it's all yours, bro.
I was looking to get 84 when I got there, you know what I mean? 24, 84. But, you know, honestly, and Randall will tell you this, back then, you were just happy to get an 80 number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because all the wide receivers and tight ends had to wear 80s back then.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then they started retiring numbers and, you know, you couldn't use them, you know. So then all these guys go to more of the teams now. But, man.
Yeah. Back then, if you get a double-digit number that's under 80, like, you know, in the teens, like, am I going to make the team?
Yeah, you're going to make the team.
Why they giving me this jersey? I think it's written on the wall. Yeah, I mean, that's – no, it's all good. I'm not one of those guys who got into the jerseys who – I didn't care. I just want to have fun. Of course, you know, you want the ball thrown to you. You want to fit in. You want to go to the playoffs. You want to win a ring, and you want to be part of the team. It's not like that now.
Yeah.
You got guys that want to wear certain pieces of equipment. Let's just say that.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But I don't want to lose this number thing. So you mentioned earlier when people aren't asking you, are you OJ McDuffie? Mm-hmm. So has that become an issue? Round draft pick?
Bro,
you were drafted at what position?
Wide receiver.
No.
Oh, 25th.
And you were 23rd.
Yes. Yep.
You both wore 81. Yep. You were 2 years apart, first round draft
pick. Our cards. You can see our cards. People give us. I'll get Randall's card sometime to sign. They give me Randall's card to
sign.
I do
the Kim Bokan, bro.
It's not me, but I'll sign it.
Yeah. Someone called me because, you know, I still do some things for the NFL. I was walking onto the field last night and I saw someone. He said, guy was drunk. He was like, OJ McDuffie, how you doing? I said, try again. Randall Hill, how you doing?
At least he got it.
No, I'm serious. And I'm like, I say, yeah, you've been drinking, haven't you? Yeah, I had a few, but yeah, I know you're Randall Hill, but you gotta look like OJ McDuffie.
That's right. We get it all the time.
And I don't take it personally.
Yeah, I don't either, man. It's good. It could be a lot worse. Right.
Yeah.
Not to throw anybody else under the bus.
As a matter of fact, there's one other person, and Juice, don't say anything. There's one other person that a lot of people confuse us with.
I know who it is.
You should be. Come on.
I'm not going to guess. I'm just walking into a buzzsaw if I guess.
No, man. No, it's all good. We won't swing on you. No. Brett Perriman.
Yep.
Ah, okay.
Brett Perriman. I've gotten
that's
too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who also came through here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brett Perriman.
Through to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through the U, but he played. He was here for a couple years with the Dolphins.
Yeah, he did.
2 years, I want to say.
Yeah, he was a little banged up man, when he got here, man. Yeah, great guy. Another great guy. Yep. I'll be honest with you, man. I had a bad perception of University of Miami players just from what I was.
How could that possibly happen?
But I'm going to tell you, man, everyone that I've met, from starting with Bernie Kosar to Randall to LT to Mike Irv, Brett, you know, all the guys that
he's
I met.
He's leaving a few guys out, Preach, but we won't go there.
Most of the guys I met through the U, some really, really, really good guys, man. Mm-hmm. And it's
that's cool.
What they Vernon did on Carey. The field was a little different than.
Oh, Vernon's one.
Vernon's outstanding individual.
He's bringing up a good point because, again, and I want the younger listening audience to understand that.
Hopefully not too much younger. I've been talking on this show.
No, seriously, because you don't want, you leave that on the field. And the way our mentality and how we were on the field was about the field. And you left that crap on the field. Don't bring it home. I'm not going to walk in my dad's house like that. Absolutely not.
It doesn't sound like it.
No.
Certainly not your mom's house.
Yes, yes, ma'am. No, sir. Yes. No, it's that's how it is. I'm not walking in my house like that because, honestly speaking, my wife didn't want – I mean, we were dating at that. She didn't want me to play football. Don't worry about it. Go do something else. You just can't do that. You have to leave that on the field and be a good, productive citizen. And I don't want to sound corny, but be that way off the field. You have to.
So that actually leads us into a great transition. But before we get to that transition, mm-hmm. since we're going to leave it on the field, thrill.
Uh-oh.
When did the thrill moniker get handed to you, or did you hand it to yourself?
Mm-mm.
And so now we talked about Duper. We had Duper here. He pulled out his license, and his license is marked Super Duper.
Super Duper.
So is Thrill legally embedded?
No,
okay.
No.
So tell us about that.
Hey, I don't have a middle name. Never have.
You have
no
middle name.
No.
Wow.
You needed one then. You needed Thrill.
No.
Well, you do now.
None of the guys in my family, in my generation, have a middle name. My dad doesn't have one. No one has a middle name. And my dad should have been Thrill because he went to Albany State College and he was on one of the only teams in United States history to be undefeated and unscored on. And he's on the Hall of Fame.
What position did he play?
He played running back. Yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame there at Albany State in Georgia.
They shut out every opponent?
Yeah, not one score. Yeah, I was just there.
What the hell did they play?
Well, it was a black school, historically black university in Albany, and they just recognized my dad and his team. There's only like maybe like five guys left who were still alive.
That's awesome.
Who was part of that. But with that being said, the whole Thrill thing came. Who's from here? Who's from South Florida?
I've been here since. I mean, I watched you play in college. I was.
Okay. There was a newspaper called the South Dade News Leader.
Okay.
Who gave me that name when I was in the 11th grade.
Wow.
The 11th grade is where that
Miami Killian defensive back, yep. Randall Thrill Hill.
Yep. They put me on the front page talking about all the interceptions and the speed and all this other stuff. And he's only in 11th grade. And they came up with this Randall Thrill Hill thing. And it just stuck. So it stuck. I mean, it was just like I would get to the University of Miami and you got some of these older guys, some of the older mafia members, such as Jerome Brown and all these guys. Hey, Thrill, what are you going to do? I'm like, and the first time they called me Thrill, and I didn't turn around because my name is Randall. And I was like, hey, you hear us talk? I'm like, I guess I'm the Thrill now, right? So it kind of stuck from there. No, my wife does not call me the Thrill.
Never.
No, absolutely not. No, my wife. No, man, my wife is strictly X's and O's. She's a trip, bro. She is funny.
So, side story, Juice, real quick. She can. So Randall's daughters are now volunteering for us here at the foundation, and Randall's wife brought him in. I've heard about his wife forever. It's the first time I had the pleasure of meeting her, and we had a meeting. We had like an official meeting. We sat down. Yep. She had a laptop open and did work while she sat there and literally worked through the meeting while her daughter conducted.
So that's what physicians do, man.
Yeah.
Man.
No. If you want to talk about that,
it was business.
How the hell is it? I'm dating you and we're going to the movies and you taking your damn books with you. You can't read that shit in the damn movie. Leave that in the car.
Hey, clearly, yeah. We're not the Thrill.
It worked out for her, though, right?
No, you know, hats off to her because, you know, she's Phi Beta Kappa Chemistry Honor Society, first black to do it. And she's a whiz. I want to say she finished her math minor when she was in middle school.
Oh, shit. You didn't need to play football.
No, bro. She's out there. She's, and it's funny. I mean, when my oldest daughter first started here, you know, I was talking to Seth, and he says, yeah, she's kind of serious. I'm like, yeah, she is. I walk into my house sometimes, and, you know,
she gets it honestly, huh?
Juice, we do, you know, you went to school, I went to school, we all went to school, and we know math. I can do rate, speed, distance calculations, I can do equations, but I walk into my house, and you hear arguing. I mean, literally, arguing. And I walk into the room, and my oldest daughter is sitting there, and she's arguing with my wife. And they have about like five or six pieces of paper in front of them. And they're going through the pages and they're slapping them back and forth. And I'm like, I said, what the hell's going on in here? Well, Alea says this. And then I'm trying to tell her, I said, well, what are you guys doing? She said, well, we're working on this equation. I said, well, let me see the equation.
Fighting over math.
No. So I'm looking at the equation. I'm like, okay, well, where's the equation? She said, well, that's the equation. Five pages? What the hell is wrong with y'all? Y'all crazy? The five-page equation? Get the hell out of here. I'm like, I look at my dog. Hey, Jake, come on. We're going to the office. All the cool people in the office. All the nerds over here. They are literally going at it about an equation.
Oh, that's what's up.
If you ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind.
Yep.
Sure.
It is absolutely 100% true. There is a fine line between being a genius and being crazy. My wife sees everything in equations.
And they're toeing the line. No, they're toeing the line at the Hill household.
The next time you see her, ask her about something. Or I tell you what, she doesn't really listen to radio. So forgive me, she won't listen to this.
I'm going to text her the link.
Do me this favor. The next time you see her, if you happen to have either some jelly beans or some M&Ms, give her an odd number. She may not even eat them. No, I'm
everything's got to be even.
This is a secret.
Not anymore.
I know, right?
used to be a secret.
She everything.
Count them, huh?
Yeah, no, because
it, like, it sounds like she can just look.
No,
she
no, she
algorithm
she,
built into her.
No, I'm serious. No, right she's there. She's doing
definitely 38. M&M's,
she is
definitely
always
38.
Doing
an equi- true story. Nobody's listening, right? Okay.
No,
she's gonna kill
not
me.
Not a person.
We're driving. This is my other house that we used to have. We're driving. And she was counting. And I looked at her and I said, what are you doing, babe? And she says, you're going to think I'm crazy. I said, well, I already think you're crazy. So she says, well, I think they removed the one or two trees. And we were like a mile away. I said, well, what are you talking about? She says, no, you're really going to think I'm crazy. I'm like, no, tell me. She says, well, I have a formula in my head about the distance with from each tree from a mile from our house. And one of them is gone. I can tell it's gone. And I'm trying to do another algorithm.
Wow. You're like, you're right. You're crazy as hell.
You got some damn problems. Are you out of your damn mind?
Definitely time for Wapner.
But no. It's definitely a blessing in disguise because when it comes to finances and stuff like that, she's on top of it. And when it comes to my daughter and some of the things that she's doing, I don't have to worry about that. I stay in my lane. Security, boys, and making sure that they're in the right place at the right time, that is my lane.
So let's talk about that lane, right? You talked about security, Juice.
Yep.
So two levels of security with Randall Hill.
Correct.
One of them is those guys on the field.
Correct. Let's talk about that.
Talk about that,
let's
Juice.
Talk about a little
especially
bit
as wide receivers, right? Because there's no more particular position on the field in terms of how they look, mm-hmm. what their fit is when they walk out on that field
right.
than the wide receivers.
Yeah, so when we played, yeah. that was Nat Moore. Yep. And Nat used to drive me crazy.
Fashion police.
Representing
the league. So for those who don't know, this exists.
Right. Mm-hmm. During the pregame, make sure you're in compliance with mm-hmm. the uniform code for the games, mm-hmm. right? So I might have had, like, for me, it was always when we had the aqua socks, I had way too much aqua showing and very little white on the bottom. You know what I mean?
And that's regulated, right? Yeah, the league is regulating.
Yeah, they have. But you know what? You still got to look good. Got to look,
look
good,
play good.
Look good, play good. I'm the guy that lays my uniform on the ground in front of my locker before a game and say, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
It's going
to
be a three-touchdown day right here.
Hopefully, at least. You know,
it's interesting. I've been doing this job for 14 years. In the NFL, you know, we don't really talk a lot about it.
14.
But when you have – and I'll just say this. When you have Nike, Reebok, Under Armour, and some of these other entities that have their product on the field and they're paying good money for it, yeah, the guys want to look good and they want to do their own little thing. But these companies – want their product displayed a certain way. I get it because that's the business part. The guys on the field are looking at it a little bit differently. But when you talk about the business part of it, Nike, Reebok, Under Armour, whomever, they want it business-like, they want it displayed properly, and they want it a professional because they're the ones who pay for it. It is what it is. I mean, generally what I try to do is I try to talk to some of the guys, and usually guys come up to me and they'll say, hey, you know, am I okay? And sometimes, you know, they may be out, but, you know, I take my direction from my bosses, but I try to, you know, do the right thing because I play the game.
Right.
I played it for 7 years.
Yeah. So did Nat, and he still was on my ass all the time. He played for a long time. So,
Jesus, I don't want to hear that bullshit. You ain't playing it now. So when did you start? You said 14 years. Your first year was, don't make me do the math. When was your first year doing it?
2005.
So that's interesting. So I wonder, because I feel like you've come up to me, I don't know that I would have been down on the field, so maybe it was Nat, but somebody would come in and, you know what, because I used to work.
Did you get the list of guys?
Well, no, so he would come up and they would say, hey, and Randall would do this. You know, it was before post game because I would still work the locker rooms okay. after I left
yes.
the foundation.
Yes.
It was post game.
Yes.
And Randall would say, hey, look, I'm just telling you, you know, if JT's going to do that, he may want to throw a towel over that logo or, you know. So Randall would try and keep guys, to his credit.
Yeah. My job is
like, because if not, I got to do it. Right. I got to write him up.
And some people don't understand. But, you know, it is what it is, and I enjoy it. It's funny how I even got that job. What I was doing was the NFL had a retired players convention here in South Florida. And I went to my agency, which we'll talk about that next. And I said, hey, it's going to be a career fair, so we need to try to target some of these guys who are qualified for hire as federal agents. And I was there and I did the career fair and I handed out some material. And Andre Collins mm-hmm. came up to me and
Penn
said,
State.
Hey. Yep. He said, I know you. I said, yeah. I said, yeah. And we start talking. And then the next thing I know, the next day, I'm getting a phone call from Merton Hanks. And Mert is like, hey, man, I got a job for you. I'm like, Mert, I'm good, bro. I got a job. I said, I ain't leaving this one. And he said, no, it's just on Sundays. And you're going to help me out. And I'm going to, you know, try to handle the uniforms and make sure that they're squared away. And I was like, hey, you know, I'm all in. And I've been doing it every. And I got this job because I was trying to help guys get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and which I always try
but they
to
don't see that, huh, when they get that $10,000 fine.
No, no. See, I don't have anything to do with that. Right. Because what I do is I try to minimize it. Like, they'll call me from NFL and they'll say, hey, can you straighten this out? Yeah, of course. And then that's when I'll tap someone on the, hey, do me a favor, bro, please. You know, they're watching these games, so let's do things in a professional.
So they give you like a heads up and a warning of guys that maybe the week before, and then you go out and you make sure they're in compliance the next time. Like, there's got to be a couple guys on the team there.
Juice is still a little heated.
I never got fined for it, thank good. That was good, even though I was probably not in compliance most of the time.
No,
but do you have any guys on the Dolphins, per se, that, you know, you have to talk to like every week?
No, because I at this particular point, I don't handle the Dolphins. I handle the visiting team.
Okay. Also, someone else is doing the Dolphins sideline.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
There's another guy. But
let's out him.
Everybody knows who we are anyway. But no.
I thought you'd do both teams.
I really did.
Keeps it fair a little bit.
No. About 4 years ago, they changed it up.
Okay.
One for each side, which is fine. It comes with the territory.
I like that. Now you can really get them pissed off before the game. Like, you know, if New England comes in here, yeah. Tom Brady, that brace is not going to work. It's too big. And
can't go out on the field like that, funny, coach. Bro.
Having worried about his uniform instead of whooping our ass.
Is this better? Nope. That's still fucked up. You got to send them back in.
No, you know, like I said, it's interesting. It kind of keeps me in tune with the game.
Yeah.
And around the guys. But what I really like doing is when the guys talk to me and they find out who I am, I like giving guys some direction in reference to what they're going to do when the lights have turned off and the cheering has stopped. Doesn't mean that your life has stopped. It means that it's time for you. Hey, listen. Hey. There's three reasons why you go to school. Learn how to get along with society. And the biggest and the most important one, which I try to teach guys all the time, is learning how to cope with change. When you have learned how to cope with change, you've mastered life, because life is nothing but change. Change is inevitable. It's going to happen. It's going to, from being a student in high school to being a student in college, from being single to being married, to not having kids to having kids, to playing on that field, to looking and actually getting a job. So when guys, and I've had guys approach me and say, hey, and there's a couple of guys who I have helped. One guy, I know he's on with Secret Service now. Because I show him the way, I give him a copy of my resume, which is the basic government formatted one. And if I can help you, I'll help you. And if I could do that from that field, I'll do it from the field.
So stop right
So
there.
When you see Randall Hill, you're at the game. You're like, hey, there's OJ. I mean, there's Randall Hill.
Yeah, right.
And you know it's not. So OJ's going to be casual, and he's going to be comfortable. Randall's in a three-piece suit with the suspenders.
Yeah.
I don't know how the hell you're doing it. If you got a fan underneath there, you're just sweating like a hostage
you
out
there.
You
never let him see you sweat.
Man, oh, man. So if you see Randall down there, and he's got that little clipboard, he's letting people know that they got too much aqua showing. And so now you know the truth. But so you talked about getting a job, and you have a job, and you don't want to leave that job.
Right.
So what I loved, and now I'm thinking about it, it was probably after I left, I was working with Jason, so I was a little more casual, not casual, but I was a little more comfortable because I wasn't quite as stressed in the locker room post game. Mm-hmm. And Thrill would come over and, hey, man, sorry I missed this event. I know you'll call. Yeah, you know, and it was all, so it's a story like this, Juice. You heard about that thing at the airport in such and such city, right. You know, when they had to take that guy off because he had the gun. Where, yeah, we knew that was going to happen for a week.
Right.
You know, so like, I don't know what Randall's doing, man. Like you said, that whole figment of your imagination thing.
Yeah,
but tell us about what you can share about your current job and how you got there, man.
Well, when I was, hell, when Juice was my roommate, sometimes I would go to sleep, sometimes I wouldn't. And the times that I wouldn't, I was actually applying for federal jobs then. Stu Weinstein at one time took me over to the FBI Miami field office, and he asked me to do a presentation. He wanted me to speak to them. And I thought I was going over there to talk. I thought they were going to have some kids there, and I was going to talk about, you know, staying out of trouble, staying away from illegal drugs, you know, going to school. And I walk in there, and there's a room full of FBI agents. And I'm like, okay, what the hell am I going to tell these guys who are already successful? So lo and behold, there's a guy who's sitting in the corner, not saying a word, about 6'4", 6'5", tall black guy, commanding figure. Kind of reminded me of my grandfather in stature as far as just his demeanor. And when I finish talking, he just looks at me and says, Mr. Hill, I need to see you in my office right now. And I'm like, okay. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to disappear for real. I'm not coming back. They ain't nobody going to know what my body parts are. But I go in the office and he tells me, he asked me what I was going to do after I finished playing. And I told him I was thinking about law enforcement. I didn't know at what level. But this guy happened to be the former deputy director of the FBI. And his name is Paul Phillip. And he put me in contact with several other individuals who were federal agents who could help me start the process. So I processed with DEA. Oh, I tried to process with DEA. They refused to give me an application.
Really?
Yeah. And
for what reason?
Not even an application?
I talked to y'all all for this.
Was the offensive coordinator from
damn near? Yeah, damn near. He refused to give me an application. Told me, he says, I can't even give you an application. You need to leave.
That's like, crazy.
I'm like, okay. So then, you know, to give you the background, the oldest federal law enforcement agency in the government is U.S. Customs, starting in 1789. Has more authority than any other federal law enforcement agency in the government. During the Homeland Security Act, the U.S. Customs basically became Homeland Security. So I processed with them back in 2000, when I was a police officer. And, cause I did want to learn how to do police work and, you know, how to grind it out. It's very interesting too. You learned a lot. But what happened is, I was appointed in 2003, and I went through the Federal Academy, and I was assigned to New Jersey. I've done New Jersey, I've done Miami, and now I'm in Texas. I've done things, I've done cases all over the world that have nexuses to interesting places. I've prosecuted and or conducted illegal narcotics cases, national security cases, intellectual property rights, also I've done a lot of interesting things, and some of the things I've done, you know, a lot of people still don't know, and a lot of stuff I still can't really talk about.
Right.
You know, especially, you know, I know you guys have a lot of people listening, but it's been an adventure and I enjoy doing it because I look at it like this. There are, like, you see these shootings in different places. Those people, some of us look at them as being very, very bad dogs. Okay. Well, to catch a bad dog, you need a bad dog. And, you know, you do things by the book, you do things as per your chain of command, and you go after bad people who, when you're asleep at night, I'm that guy. Okay. When you're at work, I'm that guy. When you are in the stadium, I'm that guy. Regardless of what's going on, I'm that guy. Because, you know, it's funny because I went out to my daughter's school today and I wanted to meet with the principal, and I told him, I said, hey, listen, I'm that guy. If I'm here, I'm that guy. Because none of that's, you know, mass shootings and all this other stuff, I'm that guy. Trust me, I'm that guy because I'm very accurate at what I do. I don't miss. I understand policies and procedures, and I believe in protecting life in the proper manner. I'm that guy. And let's leave it at that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. If you don't,
it's left.
Hey, if you don't see Randall, if you see Randall on the football field, that's one thing. But if you see him in your personal life, that's your ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he is that guy, man.
He is. And so, you know, this will happen because, again, Randall comes at ping pong tournaments, two-time defense. He won the ping pong tournament twice.
See, real quick, though.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he had a damn ping pong table in his living room.
Now we know some background. He had a hell of a partner, too. But, you know, so he, I mean, cool gear. He comes to all the events that we do, but then if I ever can't, like, if he doesn't get back to me, I know that, like, there's something real happening.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then afterwards, hey man, sorry about that, but you hear about that thing or whatever, you know, I'll get you on the next one.
I remember when Alea was born, I remember like a week or two after she was born, I left the country for a few days, and my wife had no idea where I was. Hell, I didn't know where the hell I was going.
Right.
But no, it's
I mean, there's a lot of guys who have that story, but for different reasons,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, get that envelope. Yeah.
No, but it's a lot of fun, and it's what we
fun?
Do. Yeah, it is, because it's that adrenaline rush that you get from just like playing football.
You know, that's what guys they need.
You need
that.
It. You
they
need it. That. You need it.
That adrenaline rush.
And a lot of guys cannot handle.
Can't duplicate it, man.
When they can't get that adrenaline rush, you need that rush. You want to do the. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of typing you got to do, but there's some things that are physical, and mental that you need to have it. And I'm that guy.
That's really fascinating because I've heard a number of guys in retirement say that, you know, you can get great jobs. Some guys get wonderful jobs afterwards, but nothing ever replicates that thing that you get from that level of competition. Mm-hmm. And
And maybe you found something where, you know, the stakes are even higher, obviously. So that's pretty wild.
You know what? That made me start thinking a little bit, Seth. You know, because I know when Randall and I were roommates, you know, I used to go, we got to the room. You know, me, I want to watch football all day.
Yeah.
Randall did not want to watch football all day.
He wasn't trying to watch the games?
Randall, we watched like National Geographic and stuff like that, man. He was all on some. He was on a different level already at that point.
He was getting the self destruct. This message will self destruct. Right.
I'm not a big. I mean, Juice can talk football. Juice can talk basketball. I mean, I can do it, but not like to that level. It's just not me.
Right.
I mean, I'm just a little bit different. You know, I love superhero movies, but you know, I would rather watch like Hong Kong Fooey.
Right.
Number one super. Fooey.
Hong Kong Fooey or something
first
like that.
First Hong Kong Fooey reference in the tank.
It's just me. It's just my personality. It's just, you know, I'm like Jim Carrey the mask. You know, I'm just different. I mean, Juice wants to watch sports, which is cool. And I'm starting to get more and more into it. Now, I will watch track and field.
Right.
I'm big on track and field because it's me and you one-on-one. And come on, let's go. Ain't nobody throwing me the ball. Ain't nobody doing – let's do this. But I try to be well-rounded, and what I do now helps me to be a little bit more well-rounded to understand what's going on in the world, what's going on around me, what's going on in society, how to handle things. I'm always looking at exits and entries and noticing, you know, where things are. It's just my personality and the job that I do now, you know, I love it because it lets me be me.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I get great advice from him all the time, Juice. Like, hey, you know, where do you live again? Okay, well, listen,
right.
If you see one of those 18-wheelers driving through that really doesn't belong on that road, I'm just telling you where they're coming. You know, like, give me those heads up on that stuff. Hey, man, it has been absolutely fantastic to have you in the tank, Thrill. Appreciate all the support you've given us organizationally from the foundation side, but just as a friend, it's been awesome and really, really.
Hey, we got something coming up, right? What's coming up? Cool gear?
Yeah, we're going back to school shopping, man.
Okay, that's right.
I got you in now.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to.
Ms. Donners are working here. You can't say no anymore.
Plus, not only that, I'm going to bring one or two federal agents with me, too, so we're going to make sure everybody stays in line.
We need that. We definitely need that. Nice. Appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks for diving in.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate it.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, we okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budging. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank.